As Ronnie Fish threaded his sporty two-seater through the London traffic, he was explaining to Sue Brown that he must try to persuade his Uncle Clarence, the Earl of Emsworth, to part with some money from the trust. "Let me get hold of Thumbs and we'll dash off to the registrar's. That's why I have got to get to Blandings and stay there till further notice." "Yes, I see. And you're a darling. Tell me about Blandings, Ronnie. How do you mean? Well, what sort of a place is it? I want to imagine you there while you're away." Ronnie pondered. He was not at his best as a word painter. "Oh, you know the sort of thing. Parks and gardens and terraces and immemorial elms and all that. All the usual stuff." "Any girls there?" "My cousin Millicent. The family want Millicent and me to get married." "To each other, do you mean? What a perfectly horrible idea." "Oh, it's all right. We're both against the scheme." "Oh, well, that's some comfort. What other girls will there be at Blandings?" "Well, only one that I know of. My mother met a female called Schoonmaker at Biarritz, American Pots of Money, I believe. One of those beastly tall girls. I couldn't stand her myself, and my mother was all for her. And I didn't at all like the way she seemed to be trying to shove her off onto me. And she's going to be at Blandings. Yep, there is nothing to about. Well, I'm not so sure." "Oh, well, I suppose your family are quite right. I suppose you ought really to marry some nice girl in your own set." Ronnie scowled. He thought of his mother, he thought of his Aunt Constance, and reason told him that her words were true. "Look, dash all this rot people talk about chorus girls," he said. "It's happened in our family before. My Uncle Galley was in love with some girl on the stage back in the Dark Ages, and they bust the thing up and shipped him off to South Africa or somewhere to forget her. And look at him. Drew 3 sober breaths in the year 1900 and then decided that was enough. I expect I shall be the same. I've a jolly good mind to go to Uncle Clarence tonight and simply tell him that I'm in love with you and intend to marry you, and if the family don't like it, they can lump it." "I wouldn't." "Oh, well, perhaps you're right." I'm sure I am. If he hears about me, he certainly won't give you your money." "What sort of a man is he, Uncle Clarence?" "Oh, a mild, dreamy old boy. At the moment, I hear, he's wrapped up in his pig." "Oh, that sounds cozy. Well, I'd feel a lot easier in my mind, I can tell you, going down there to tackle him if I were a pig. I'd expect a much warmer welcome." "You were rather a pig just now, weren't you?" Ronnie quivered. Remorse gnawed the throbbing heart beneath his beautifully cut waistcoat. "I'm sorry. I'm frightfully sorry. The fact is, I'm so crazy about you, I get jealous of everybody you meet. Do you know, Sue, if you ever let me down, I'd... I don't know what I'd do." He became lyrical. Sue, leaning back, listened contentedly. "By the way," said Ronnie, the flood of eloquence subsiding, "a thought occurs. Have you any notion where we're headed for?" "Heaven." "No, I mean at the moment." "Well, I suppose you were taking me to tea somewhere." "But where? We've got right out of the tea zone. I've just been driving at random." "Oh, you'd better switch back. How do you feel about the Carlton?" "Oh, all right. Or the Ritz. Whichever you like. Or, gosh, what's the matter?" "Sue, I've got an idea." "Oh, beginner's luck. Why not go to Norfolk Street? To your home?" "Yes, there's nobody there. And our butler's a staunch bird. He'll get us tea and say nothing." "Oh, I'd like to meet a staunch butler. How far is it to Norfolk Street? Next turning." "You're sure there's nobody in the house? None of the dear old family?" "Not a soul." He was right. Lady Constance Keble was not actually in the house. At the moment when he spoke, she'd just closed the front door behind her. After waiting half an hour in the hope of her nephew's return, she'd left a note for him on the hall table and was going to Claridge's for a cup of tea. It was not until he'd drawn up immediately opposite the house that Ronnie perceived what stood upon the steps. Having done so, he blenched visibly. "Oh, my sainted aunt," he said. The sainted aunt was inspecting the two-seater and its contents with a frozen stare. Her eyebrows were two marks of interrogation.
"Good afternoon, Ronald."
Hello, Aunt Constance.
"Will you introduce me?"
There is no doubt that peril sharpens the intellect. His masters at school and his tutors at the university, having had to do with Ronald Overbury Fish almost entirely at times when his soul was at rest, had classed him among the less keen-witted of their charges. Had they seen him now, in this crisis, they would have pointed at him with pride. For after turning a rather pretty geranium tint and running a finger round the inside of his collar for an instant, as if he found it too tight, Ronnie Fish spoke the only two words in the language which could have averted disaster.
Miss Shoemaker, he said huskily.
Sue, at his side, gave a little gasp. These were unsuspected depths.
Miss Shoemaker?
Lady Constance's resemblance to Apollyon straddling right across the way had vanished abruptly. Remorse came upon her that she should have wronged her blameless nephew with unfounded suspicions. Miss Shoemaker, my aunt, Lady Constance Keeble, said Ronnie, going from strength to strength. Sue was not the girl to sit dumbly by and fail a partner in his hour of need. She smiled brightly.
How do you do, Lady Constance, she said. I feel I know you already. Lady Julia told me so much about you at Bear Ritz.
A momentary qualm, lest she should have made her manner a shade too patronizing, melted in the sunshine of the older woman's smile. Lady Constance had become charming, almost effusive. She'd always hoped that Ronald and Millicent would make a match of it, but failing that, this rich Miss Shoemaker was certainly the next best thing.
So here you are in London. When can you come down to Blandings?
Oh, very soon, I hope.
Well, I'm going there this evening. I only ran up for the day. I want you to drive me back, Ronald.
Ronald nodded silently. The crisis passed. A weakness had come upon him. He preferred not to speak, if speech could be avoided.
Do try to come soon. The gardens are looking delightful. My brother will be so glad to see you. I was just on my way to Claridge's for a cup of tea. Won't you come too?
I'd love to, said Sue. But I really must be getting on. Ronnie was taking me shopping.
Well, I'm so delighted to have met you. My sister told me so much about you in her letters. After you put your luggage on the car, Ronald, will you come and pick me up at Claridge's?
Oh, right-ho.
Well, goodbye for the moment.
Goodbye, Lady Constance. Goodbye. The two-seater moved off, and Ronnie, taking his right hand off the wheel as it turned the corner, groped for a handkerchief, found it, and passed it over his throbbing brow.
So that was Aunt Constance, said Sue. Why didn't you ever tell me you were one of those swift thinkers?
I didn't know it myself. Of course, I'm afraid it has complicated things a little.
Why? Everything looks pretty smooth to me. Aunt Constance swallowed you without a yip.
And when the real Miss Shoemaker arrives at Blandings with her jewels and her 24 trunks, said Sue gently. The two-seater swerved madly across Grosvenor Street.
Gosh, said Ronnie. Sue's eyes were sparkling. There is only one thing to do, she said. Now you're in, you'll have to go in deeper. You'll have to put her off.
How?
Send her a wire saying she mustn't come to Blandings because scarlet fever or something has broken out.
But I couldn't.
You must. Sign it in Lady Constance's name.
But suppose, well, suppose they do find out.
You won't be in any worse hole than you will be if she comes sailing up to the front door all ready to stay a couple of weeks. And she will, unless you wire.
Yeah, that's true. What it means, said Sue, is that instead of having plenty of time to get that money out of Lord Emsworth, you'll have to work quick.
She touched his arm. Here's a post office, she said. Go in and send that wire before you weaken.
Ronnie stopped the car and strode into the post office, thinking deeply. Lord Emsworth, leaning pensively out of the library window and sniffing the morning air, received an unpleasant shock.
Bless my soul, said Lord Emsworth.
A frown furrowed his lordship's brow. He decided to visit his sister Constance in her boudoir.
Constance, my dear.
Lady Constance looked up from the letter she was writing. She clicked her tongue, for it annoyed her to be interrupted at her correspondence.
Well, Clarence?
I say, Constance, most extraordinary thing happened just now. I was looking out a library window, and you remember Baxter?
Well, of course I remember Baxter.
Well, his ghost has just walked across the gravel.
What are you talking about, Clarence?
I'm telling you. I was looking out of the library window, and I suddenly saw...
Mr. Baxter, announced Beach, flinging open the door.
Mr. Baxter?
Good morning, Lady Constance. Rupert Baxter advanced with joyous camaraderie, glinting from both lenses. Then he perceived his former employer and his exuberance diminished. Good morning, Lord Emsworth, he said, flashing his spectacles austerely upon him. There was a pause. Lord Emsworth adjusted his pince-nez and regarded the visitor dumbly. Baxter was the first to break an uncomfortable silence.
I happen to be taking a caravan holiday in this neighbourhood, Lady Constance, and finding myself near Market Blandings last night, I thought I would...
Why, of course! We should never have forgiven you if you'd not come to see us, should we, Clarence?
Eh?
I said, should we?
Should we what?
Said Lord Emsworth, who was still adjusting his mind. Lady Constance's lips tightened, and a moment passed during which it seemed almost a 50-50 chance that a handsome silver inkpot would fly through the air in the direction of her brother's head. But she was a strong woman. She fought down the impulse.
Did you say you were travelling in a caravan, Mr. Baxter?
In a caravan. I left it in the park.
Well, of course, you must come and stay with us. You must make quite a long visit. I will send somebody over to fetch your things.
No, it is exceedingly kind of you.
It will be delightful having you here again, won't it, Clarence?
Eh?
I said, won't it?
Won't it what?
Lady Constance's hand trembled above the inkpot like a hovering butterfly. She withdrew it.
Will it not be delightful having Mr. Baxter back at the castle again?
I'm going down to see my pig,
said Lord Emsworth. A silence followed his departure, such as would have fallen had a coffin just been carried out. The Lady Constance shook off Bloom.
Oh, Mr. Baxter, I'm so glad you were able to come. And how clever of you to come in a caravan. It prevented your arrival seeming prearranged.
I thought of that.
Oh, you think of everything.
Rupert Baxter stepped to the door, opened it, satisfied himself that no listeners lurked in the passage, and returned to his seat.
Are you in trouble, Lady Constance? Your letter seems so very urgent.
I am in dreadful trouble, Mr. Baxter.
Is there anything that I can do?
There is nobody except you can do anything, but I hardly like to ask you.
Ask me whatever you please, and if it is in my power...
Oh, it is. Rupert Baxter hitched his chair an inch closer to hers.
Tell me. Well, you know my brother Galahad. I have never met him. Is he here now?
Yes, finishing his reminiscences. The book is full from beginning to end of libelous anecdotes, Mr. Baxter, about all our best friends. If it is published, we shall not have a friend left.
So, you want me to get hold of the manuscript and destroy it?
Lady Constance stared, stunned by this penetration.
Yes, she gasped. Oh, it does seem, you know, an extraordinary thing to do.
Not at all.
But Lord Emsworth refuses to do anything.
I see.
You know how he is in the face of any emergency.
I do indeed.
So supine, so helpless, so vague and altogether incompetent.
Precisely.
Mr. Baxter, you are my only hope.
Baxter removed his spectacles, polished them, and put them back again.
I shall be delighted, Lady Constance, to do anything to help you that lies in my power.
There is only one copy of it in existence?
Yes, I'm sure of that. Galahad told me that he was waiting till it was finished before sending it to the typist.
Then you need have no further anxiety.
It was a moment when Lady Constance Keble would have given much for eloquence. She sought for words that should adequately express her feelings, but could find none.
Oh, Mr. Baxter, she said.